Hi, sport. Hi, muffin. Better get a move on or you'll be late for school. Welcome to the Movie Ladder Podcast. We're climbing the rungs of cinematic connections. Each week, we're discussing a movie that connects to the movie from the previous week's podcast. Last week, we discussed Barbie. And this week, due to a entering another world connection, I guess.
Sure.
We'll be talking about Pleasantville. I'm Zach Brooks. And for the 221st time, I'm joined by
Brandon Fitzpatrick. I don't have any quippy intro for this week, Zach.
No quip.
I didn't have a fake name that I wanted to come in with. I didn't have a quip. I didn't have a, you know, I couldn't think of anything clever. So, you know,
could have just said, "Hi, honey, I'm home."
That's fair enough. Where's my dinner, Zach?
Yeah, that's true.
Where is my dinner?
Yeah. All right. Well, it's just the two of us, Brennan, for the first time in
weeks.
The last time that we did not have a guest was The Nice Guys on January 30th. It is now almost March 30th. We almost had two straight months of guests.
That was all the way back in episode 5 of the year. That's crazy. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow, The Nice Guys. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good run of guests. We thank all of our guests for coming on for the past 2 months. We've had a lot of fun. You know, it was especially, you know, just it's nice to have all these friends of the podcast, you know.
There we go. Yep. I thought you were going to say especially and then name one guest in particular.
Yeah, just one. Like, no.
You were going to pick your favorite. All right. Well, yep. Just the two of us. We're jumping to the TV. I guess you could say that this podcast, every week we jump into the TV.
Indeed, we do. Yeah. Or the...
We're not characters in the TV. We're just talking about it.
Just providing our commentary on what is appropriate for us to be watching and what is not.
There we go. Yeah, judging. All right. Judging. So we're heading back in time. 1998. It's kind of sad, Brennan. This is almost 30 years old. And in this movie, they basically jump back 30 years in the past. It's kind of like
Back to the Future thing. It's like Back to the Future. Yeah, it is.
I wrote down a couple of things on that note when we got into the movie. But before we do, how's it going? Anything to update people on?
Pretty good. I mean, we're in the final week of producing podcasts over at Kosher Recaps. I've been working on a couple of special projects with the crew over there as they wind things down. Stay tuned to those. You know, those post-show recaps, podcast feeds for some really interesting and fun final podcasts coming out of that network that I'm both excited and very sad to have been a part of, because it is really hard to say goodbye to a podcast network that has meant so much, you know?
It's brought lots of connections, but it seems like the spirit of post-show recaps is living on in all of these other networks that have popped up.
Absolutely. There are a lot of tiny networks that are popping up here and there. You should check your social media feeds. I'm sure you'll see your favorite hosts announcing what they are planning to do next. So.
Nice. I mean, I'm not. And if I'm your favorite host, I'm not doing anything else.
We have this.
Yes. We've had this. We've been having this.
Yeah, we've been
121 here. Times. All right. Well, what have you been watching this week?
It was a lighter movie week for me this week. Watched a couple of movies. Three movies. Which one do I actually want to talk about? It's really hard to say. I mean, all of them were both fine to okay, that was pretty good. I think I'll go with a newer movie that sort of should have been on my radar, but for some reason wasn't, starring Ethan Hawke, about the great jazz musician Chet Baker, called Born Into Blue. Born to Be Blue. I streamed this on Canopy. Ethan Hawke plays Chet Baker, who it's a really interesting take on a biopic film, because it's not a cradle to grave biopic. It's really a grave to resurrection biopic, because when you meet Chet Baker at the beginning of this film, he's a heroin addict and he's lost all of his recording contracts and all of his friends, and his life is in complete shambles, basically. You literally start with Ethan Hawke, laying in his own piss in a jail cell is the first frame of this movie. Wow. Mm-hmm. And it's a really, really interesting character study watching Ethan Hawke, like, despondent, melancholy, sad, brooding Ethan Hawke, I think is the best Ethan Hawke. Mm-hmm. And I think he's really, really good in this movie. So, yeah, I mean, I recommend people check it out if they are into biopics and may have missed this one that came out in 2013.
So, nice. Yeah. First I've heard of it.
Or 2015. I'm sorry. 2015.
Oh, right, yeah. 2015. Maybe the idea was born in 2013.
Could be.
Yeah. I didn't watch any movies this week. Last movie I watched before Pleasantville was Barbie. So I have the literal movie ladder on my Letterboxd list. I mean, that's because I watched like hours beyond hours of college basketball this weekend. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, there were some good games. I do feel like this first weekend of NCAA was kind of a little bit lighter on the drama and the intensity. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of blowouts, a lot of the top seeds advancing. So I wouldn't even say that would be the best thing I watched, although there were a couple interesting games, especially if you gambled on them. I will say that the best thing, the best thing I watched? It was not Manhunt. I just watched an episode of Manhunt, and I didn't think, that show is, like, fine-ish.
Yeah.
It's a good watch on the treadmill show. It's my treadmill show right now.
Okay, so, that makes sense.
Yeah. And I don't know, I like the book better. I did get Dune, the book, from the library. Nice. And I was hoping I could start that because that could be like the best thing I read this week, but I have not opened that yet. I will go with this week's episode of Curb was the best thing I watched this
Absolutely.
Week.
Five out of five, no notes. That was a banger episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm.
We will see if our friends over at Pretty Good agree.
Spoiler alert, I gave it five pretties.
There we go.
After last week's fiasco. I gave this one five pretties.
I mean, I think you were easily swayed by a certain guest star in this episode. I think that helped.
Yeah, probably.
Both guest stars, but yeah. No, I think it was like we only have a couple episodes of Curb left, and this one felt like a very return to form, like just silly episode with like some commentary on different like random things that happen in life, like how you interact with valets, and smells in cars, musty smells. Yep.
There was a really good like etiquette thing that I wanted to talk to you about from it, and I think it'll be really fun discussion on Pretty Good there with Av and Chester. And that's so if you leave something at a friend's house and say I'll be back for this later, and then they use that thing, you have every right to be mad at them, right?
Yeah, like, I don't think that's a discussion really.
I'm totally on Larry's side about. Yeah. The thing, like, there's no the argument is ridiculous,
right? No, I don't. That's one of those where it's like it's almost just like a straw man scenario where it's like if anybody did this, they're just an asshole.
Exactly.
Like if you leave food at somebody's house, it's one thing if you leave it for like a week and it's like, well, it was gonna go bad in a day, but if you just eat the food that's in the fridge that somebody left and said they're gonna come, they only left it so it wouldn't like melt in their car,
right?
And like, it's not yours. Like, you told them they can store it in your fridge. It's not yours to take. Or, like, it would make more sense if it was, like, they ate half of it. But to just eat the whole thing and not replace it is just, like, there's no argument on that person's side. So
I absolutely agree.
Yeah, I don't think there's much of an argument there.
Yeah.
But overall, very fun episode. I don't know. Yeah. How many episodes we have left? Like, three, four?
Three or four. I'm not sure what the total episode count is. So.
Yeah. So.
I think this is episode 8 out of 12 or 13. Yeah.
Do you think that this is actually the last season of Curb, or do you think you could just...
I mean, they always say that, but I could see this being the last season, yeah.
Yeah. If they... I mean, I think the fact that they're really pushing this one is the last season.
Yeah.
Only two left. This was episode 8.
Oh, wow. So there's only 10 this season. That's crazy. Yeah. Okay.
Next week is the penultimate episode of Curb.
Should we do a quick... Who do you think is going to be Larry's new lawyer, or is he going to defend himself?
Why don't we let the guys who specialize in this show talk about that?
It's fine. Sorry, Av.
I don't know. Maybe his new lawyer will be, what is his name? J.T. Walsh? Is that who it is?
Yeah, that would be fantastic if he was still alive.
Yeah, I wondered if he was alive.
This is one of J.T. Walsh's last roles in Pleasantville, but he would have been a very good Curb character, for sure.
Yeah. I always get J.T. Walsh and then... the actor who just passed away, who was
M. Emmett Walsh.
Yes, M. Emmett. Yes,
he's in everything. Yeah, he's
really good. Are they related? JT Walsh and Aya? That's why I get them confused.
And then there's W. Earl Brown, who looks like if M. Emmett Walsh and JT Walsh had a baby, it would be W. Earl Brown.
Oh. If his name was Emmett Brown, he could be Doc Brown.
And then we'd have to go back to the future, to the 1950s. Boom!
Well, there we go. Good job. All right.
We did it, guys.
Nice transition. So, Pleasantville, hopping back almost 30 years to 1998. Yeah. I think they go back to 1951. So it's actually like 37 years that back. And it's not even time travel because it's going into a show, but it's going back into a show that takes place in 1951. Two teenage siblings, played by Tobey Maguire and Reese Witherspoon, David and Jennifer. I don't think I even could tell you either of their names. Having watched this movie,
not by the end of it. They're Bud and Mary Sue.
True. Yes, that's why. Yeah. Because they're Bud and Mary Sue.
They're Bud and Mary Sue. There you go.
So this my first time seeing this. Probably. I mean, I'm sure I've seen it a couple times, but probably not since like early 2000s. How about you?
Same. I think I might have watched this once, like in my adult years of movie watching, but it's been a long time. I know I saw this in theaters, and then I probably saw it like a couple times in college. I think I wrote a paper on this in college.
I wish you could have dug it up.
It's hard to remember. I know that there was a paper assigned about this movie, but I don't remember if I had to write that paper or if it's just one that somebody else I knew had to write, because there's a lot of social commentary that's ripe for, college essays in this film.
I wish you could find it. Brendan, I did see, not to jump too far ahead to like ratings, but I did happen to stumble on, I don't even know where, how I stumbled on it, but a list of yours of the best movies of 1998.
Oh.
And do you know what movie was listed as number one on your list?
No, because I didn't look at that before we started today. So I mean, it's there somewhere. Is it Pleasantville?
It is Pleasantville. Yes. Yeah, your number one is Pleasantville, followed by Saving Private Ryan, The Truman Show, Big Lebowski, and Velvet Goldmine are your top five.
That makes sense. That actually makes sense.
You edited this list because 5 years ago. Published 5 years ago, updated 2 months ago.
Yeah, that's a pleasant surprise because I will tell you, I had kind of forgotten how much I enjoyed this movie before I watched it last night. Mm-hmm. I was pleasantly surprised by how much I enjoyed this, especially like, it's a movie of two very different tones where the first half is all about, you know, the integration of Bud and Mary Sue into this new world from their real world and the chaos that they cause. And then the second half is all of the fallout and social commentary of what happens when literal integration takes place. And I think that this film, while it has some flaws, handles those flaws in a way that I'm sort of able to dismiss them. Like some of the stuff feels stereotypical, but I also think it feels stereotypical because there have been a lot of movies like Pleasantville that have tried to do the subtext is text discussion on race and equality in America since 1998. And some have been successful and some have failed. And I think that Pleasantville broke a lot of barriers down in terms of the types of stories you could tell to get this sort of messaging across.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
A couple things to react to from what you said. I thought that this movie is definitely kind of two halves. It is a very good pairing with Barbie. I am shocked. I went back and looked at that Greta Gerwig list that we linked to last week of like movies that inspired Barbie. I am shocked that Pleasantville is not on that list because
that's very surprising.
There are so many similar, like almost like, you know how there's times where you'll hear about like an author saying like a movie plagiarized their idea. Idea. Like, wasn't there just one where somebody sued somebody? Oh, Holdovers was the writer said like they took my script and basically like made the Holdovers.
Yeah.
Barbie isn't that close, but it is like very similar in terms of tone and the way it handles like the meta nature of going to a different world and like pop culture and fake stories and how those kind of can be a commentary on social commentary or like social commentary on social issues. Yep. And so, I mean, this is a really good pairing with Barbie.
I think so, too.
I'm really glad that we ended up doing this one. And it really felt like almost the inspiration for Barbie. So I was shocked to not see it on that list.
Yeah, it's very surprising, especially because, like, even the small things, like the way the color palette is used as the color starts to come to life in this 1950s world, and the sort of surreal nature of the color.
Yeah.
Reminded me a lot of the way the pink is used in Barbie, in Barbie Land.
Right. You that know, and like, also the people that are living on, it reminded me of Westworld a lot too, right? People who are living on, like the Jeff Daniels character.
Yes.
Where he's like, well, I can't, what is it? Like, you come in and you wipe the tables and then I make the burgers, right? Like,
yeah, I'm wiping the counter and you always fill the napkins. And since you weren't here to fill the napkins, I just kept wiping the table and you see the buff mark in the counter.
Yeah. It's like people who live on their narrative. So like it also reminded me a lot of Westworld in that sense. Yeah.
Everyone's on a loop.
And in Barbie, like there were, you know, like the things that happen and they just happen. Like I kept thinking back to like Barbie fake drinking the water, like where she drinks the water and nothing comes out. Yeah, and I felt like that type of thing happens a lot in the Pleasantville world.
Right.
And so,
like
yeah.
The fact that when Mary Sue goes into the bathrooms in the diner and there's no toilet.
Right. Yes. Exactly. That type of thing. Exactly. That's a good example.
Because there weren't toilets on television back then. But that's, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I do really like that, like the way that this movie introduces, like has like a character who introduces new ideas into this world and how these new ideas like really break these people out of their cycles and break this world, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. But I also feel like there is an ickiness in this movie because it is so much about literally people becoming color. Like they're called coloreds, becoming in color, being marginalized, being segregated, and there's not a single black person in this movie.
And that's, I think, the commentary that it's trying to. I think that's 100% intentional because it's trying to say, hey, if you're not going to get it through showing you stories of black people, we're going to give you the metaphor in your face using white people.
Okay.
And this was a thing that movies did in the 90s. If you recall, there's a big speech that Matthew McConaughey's character gives at the end of Time to Kill when he talks about Carl Lee Haley, who is on trial for murdering two white racists who had, you know, abused his daughter. And he says, okay, I want you to close your eyes. Now picture a little girl walking home from school. And these two men approach her and all he describes the entire incident of that film. And then he's like, now imagine she's white. And that's what this film is doing, is like, imagine, like, it's sort of that argument that people made when Turning Red came out, where they were like, well, I can't relate to these characters because they're Asian and not American, you know what I mean? Or not white. And it's like, well, yeah, that's the entire point, is because we want you to see the world through other people's POVs. And the only way to do that at this point in time is to make a story that might make you think, hey, I see myself in these characters. Why do I act this way? Like, but again, this could also be a movie that is just preaching to the choir.
Right. I feel like it's almost
the liberals that are going to go see this movie.
Well, I just think it's hard to put myself exactly in the mindset of 1988. But I just feel like, especially if you're going to use, like, they don't, like, they didn't use like a euphemism, right? What they call the people who get color in this world because they are like
literally colored.
They call them coloreds, and they get color because they are. Like they lose their innocence, right? Like you get the color because they have sex or they have these feelings that are like outside of their narratives. Like there are things that break them from their innocence, like the loss of innocence, which is represented by color. And then they don't use some euphemism, right? They don't.
No.
They call them, like, there are signs that say no coloreds.
Well, and it's
like
a striking metaphor because there's a reason that it's set in the 1950s. And that's because there's, you know how, like, there's that thing of everybody talks about the good old days. and how perfect things were back in the 1950s. And if we could just go back to the good old days when everything was, you know, we stayed over here and other people stayed over there and never the twain shall meet. And we lived in our perfect little bubbles. And this movie intentionally so says there was nothing so great about the good old days. Like you're thinking about the good old days that you're imagining were a lie.
Yeah.
There were no good old days.
Yeah, I just think it needs to be addressed. I think if you're going to use the term, like, even if they want, if like what they're going for in this movie, and I don't get necessarily the sense that not having anybody of color in this movie is a statement on racism. Like it reads to me, at least now, right? Maybe not in 1998, but it reads to me now where I'm like, well, it is all white people. They are called coloreds. And then they are somebody who is putting on black and white face.
Yep. White face.
And it reminds, especially after watching like Passing.
Yes.
And just like, there's just so, it's like so much of it feels really loaded. I really, really like this movie. I did not want to come in and like be negative on this right away. But it's just like an ickiness that it's like a thing that was hard for me to get through.
Yeah, I think we've grown past the commentary that the film is trying to make as a society. But in a lot of ways, we still haven't. So you kind of still need movies like this.
I think it's a good commentary, though. I think it's like it's an interesting metaphor to be like, this is how these are people who lose their innocence. And then it's like, I mean, it's very timely for it where they're like, no, we are not going to teach these things in school. We are going to burn these books.
We're going to burn all the books.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like we're going to ban art and paint colors and sex and topics in school. Like that actually is very timely with what happens in a lot of parts of this country where they're like, we are not going to teach about the Civil War in school, or we are not going to teach about DEI and diversity. Right. Like we are going to exclude those things from books. You know, like the bans on library books and things like that. Like that all actually still holds up 30 years later.
For sure.
And I think like there's a lot of really clever stuff. I love the like literal eating of the apple that happens in this, like the Adam and Eve metaphor that happens with the eating of the apple. Like, and there's also like, before we even get to any of the social commentary, I think it's a very, like you said, that first the first half of this movie is very fun. It's very fun fish out of water, too. Yeah.
It's very Back to the Future when Marty first gets back to the 50s. Like, I mean, if we hadn't already done Back to the Future, we could go back again and back to the future, you know?
Yeah, no. This movie did come up on the Back to the Future. So obviously, it actually had a little bit of a run in the 90s episodes of this podcast. Episode 96, Serial Mom, this one came up. Megan the Librarian suggested it.
Yeah.
Another movie that features a perfect mom in the suburbs.
Yeah.
They also buy Don Knotts photo portrait in Serial Mom. Don Knotts shows up in this. He's a TV repairman. It showed up in this also came up in Who Framed Roger Rabbit.
That also tracks,
That was my suggestion off of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I think they probably what I was going for was like the black and white to color being the cartoons and live action. And then I suggested this off of Back to the Future, which this movie I just kept thinking about. Like you said, I just kept thinking about Back to the Future in this.
I mean, it's shocking they don't play Mr. Sandman at any point in this film, you know, because it's
right.
Like, so
no, yeah. I mean, I mean, there's like a lot of like there's nothing directly referencing Back to the Future, but it's like high school kid. Has like a crazy science thing by a crazy old man who gets into this. Just that he tells him takes his sister.
Gets his mom in a love affair with someone accidentally.
Yeah.
You know, with the Jeff Daniels character. Yeah.
We have I mean, the 50s diner is kind of like a 50s trope anyway. We have the 50s diner, right? And like, I don't know. Like, I think like it works really well as a pairing with Back to the Future as well. Like, this movie does pull from a lot of movies that came before it and a lot of movies that come after it that I think pull from Pleasantville. It's also a great title. I feel like everybody recognizes the title Pleasantville.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great, it also is a great title because it is it's playing on like the types of shows from the 1950s that it's parodying, but also could have been the title of a show that was on in 1951.
Oh, for sure.
You know, with Father Knows Best and Leave It to Beaver and Dennis the Menace and like all of the movies that are all of the TV shows that this film is drawing inspiration from for its tone and its palette. There weren't African-American characters in those TV shows either.
Right. That's true. Mm-hmm.
And the, one of the things that this film deftly does is it, you know, once the tide starts to turn in this film and the tone starts to change, is it changes from being a straight two-camera sitcom 1950s style filmmaking to suddenly when the people are attacking the diner with rocks and with chairs, you switch to a documentary news style filmmaking that is very reminiscent of the live action news footage if you ever watch a documentary about the civil rights movement.
Interesting.
And people yelling and screaming and the close-ups on people's faces. And it's very, like, it's a very noticeable shift in camera. And I'm, this goes to something I wanted to ask about, and I tried to do some research and figure out. So there are two directors on this film. We have Gary Ross, who is the primary director, producer, writer. And then his best friend, Steven Soderbergh, comes on.
Oh, wow.
And films some parts of this film. And I'm very curious what aspects Soderbergh filmed, or even if it matters, and he just did like some second unit pickups or something. But they do that again in The Hunger Games.
Yeah.
Where Soderbergh was assistant director on The Hunger Games too. So it could be nothing and they're just friends and they help each other out. But it was really interesting to me that Soderbergh had a hand in filming this.
Yeah, I mean, I saw Soderbergh shows up in the credits as a producer. I did not realize he was the assistant director on this. I think, like, the filmmaking definitely, the style does change at one point in this, like you said. And to me, I didn't pick it up as much being, like documentary feel. Like, it is, like, cinema verite, I feel like, a little bit, where it's, like, very, like, handheld on the ground. But to me, it almost felt like Hitchcockian, where it's, like, kind of close-ups and, like, at an angle a lot of times,
like, felt like
from the ground. Yeah, so, like, especially when, like, things are changing, it's just, like, that, like, unsettling, like, Lynch, Hitchcock-type feel.
Gotcha.
And so I would guess, I feel like that's the stuff Soderbergh did, if I had to guess. Especially because of the way in Soderbergh's later career, he's gotten so much into, like, filming on iPhones and getting that, like, kind of handheld feel. I mean, he obviously didn't do this on an iPhone, but I could see that being... that being the stuff he did, just if I just had to guess.
I would think so too.
And, you know, I think, like, everything that we're getting to in this with the before they go to Pleasantville, the, like, you know, Alice when she's, or Alice before she goes to Wonderland, but Dorothy before she goes to Oz, right? Like, that stuff. What I noticed on this watch is that stuff really feels like the way that's filmed and, like, how overly dramatic that is, is that's almost like you're watching, like, a Dawson's Creek.
Yeah.
And that felt like a teen soap opera, like, played up to the point where you're watching people in a show go into a show like that, like,
for
that multiple levels.
Yeah, it definitely reminded me a lot of those, like, mid-90s teenage shows, like the Dawson's Creek, like your like My So-Called Life type thing.
Buffy, like, it's like a high school drama, like the high school drama where, you know, she's trying to get the attention of the most popular kid, you know, the most popular boy in school, and her brother is a geek, and, like, just the way
it had a Freaks and Geeks vibe, actually.
Like, none of it feels natural in the outside world, and so it all feels artificial in both the outside world and in the Pleasantville world. And I really like that this movie is meta before, you know, this is before that kind of, like, meta nature was in a lot of movies. I mean, this really feels like it broke the mold. And I love that it starts with that, like, the TV time intro too.
I love the weird intro, because that reminded me a lot of the Barbie intro from last week in terms of being an unconventional intro to the history of the world that we're about to go into.
Especially now being almost the same distance from, you know, like, the reruns he's watching are from the show airing in the 50s.
Right.
And that's, I guess that's 40 years, not 30 years. So
my math. Well, and the concept of Barbie, the concept of Barbie given to you at the beginning of the film is the concept that was Barbie in the 60s. And then you're getting a modern, like, the actuality years later of that.
The moment in this movie that made me feel the most like this movie now, and I know my math has been off this whole podcast where I kept saying, oh, we're as far away from this movie as this movie was from the show. Like, okay, 10-15 years off of that. But they're all in the high school class in the outside world timeline, right? In the '90s. And the teacher says, she's talking about global warming. And she says, by the time you're 30, temperatures are going to rise 2.5 degrees and all of these terrible things are going to be happening. Well, this was 1998. So, you know, and they're 18
people
years
were
old.
Saying that in 98 about the ozone layer and global warming. And
that and those people all, if they're 18 in 1998, that means they're born in 1970, which means that they turned, they were born in 1980. So that means that these kids in this classroom all turned 30 right around 2010, and we're now in 2024. So we're not 14 years. They're not 44 years old. All of these people that were in that class.
Did they get anything that happened? Yeah.
I did want to look up like how much have average temperatures risen.
I mean, but just look up how old Tobey Maguire is right now. I mean, you know, that just, you know, that about maps out, you know.
Right. But when this movie came out and I was younger and I was in like early high school or middle school when I watched this movie, right? Like, oh my God, when I'm 30 years old, like, you know, that 30 years old feels, and now we're way beyond 30, right? We're way beyond that age. So that was a moment right away in this movie where I was like, oh wow. Like it's, you know, they always say that about Back to the Future. Like now, you know, we're further away from Back to the Future than Marty was from when he went back into the past. And we're now further away from Pleasantville.
Let's get a little into the cast, because I think that this is like a really amazing cast, especially top of the line between Tobey Maguire and Reese Witherspoon, William H. Macy, Joan Allen, Jeff Daniels, J.T. Walsh, a young Paul Walker who looks just like a Ken doll. He looks perfect. He's amazing. There's a girl that Bud dates in this film for a second that I thought was a young Rachel McAdams. It's not. But I really love the cast of this film. I think that everybody's really like at their peak doing a really great job.
Yeah, like, I don't know if I would say anybody's at their peak. I feel like Tobey Maguire's peak is probably Spider-Man.
So the first Spider-Man. I mean, he's only 2 years away from that.
Right.
I mean, this is peak Reese Witherspoon, where she's like starting to hit her I'm a young leading actress who could carry a film era. Like, she's what, a year away from Election, and she just came off Cruel Intentions. She's about to do
Cruel Intentions is the next year.
Okay, so next year is Cruel Intentions, then Election. Yeah, so she's like just starting to become like really awesome, hot young movie star. And then, I mean, Joan Allen is a really solid, like, hey, it's Joan Allen lady in film, where she's not a leading lady, but she's a great supporting leading lady. And then you have William H. Macy, who's really just been a that guy for a decade. And he's so perfect in this.
And it's a few years after, you know, the very first movie we did on this podcast.
Fargo.
I do think like everybody is very, I don't know if anybody I would say is at the peak of their career, maybe Joan Allen, although I'm not super, like, I don't have her filmography top of mind. But I do think like everybody in this is really well cast. I think like Tobey Maguire is the geeky brother, and Reese Witherspoon is the sister, make a lot of sense as this pairing, both in the outside world and in the Pleasantville world. I think they work. I think William H. Macy as the father is perfect. I think Joan Allen's really good as the mom as well.
Yeah. I think she was my standout on this watch. Like, I really, really enjoyed her performance, especially as she starts to sort of decide she wants to explore the world outside of her routine. Like, the first time she sees the Jeff Daniels character in the doorway, she's like, oh, I've just been living in this like routine suburban life. I forgot that there was an ice cream man down the street that I find attractive. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think I really love her journey throughout the film. Like, she's the one I really clung to on this watch. And her performance is so subtle, but there's a lot of growth there.
And I did really like Paul Walker showing up as like, I think he's just kind of like really good in that like jock, like, you know, kind of Ken doll. I think that's a really good term for it. Like the Ken doll role. And this is before any of the Fast and Furious movies. Like this is when he does do a lot of these movies where he's in this kind of role. He's just kind of like, that good. He's good at being like the bland bro, I feel like.
For sure.
And I think he's good in this, and he looks so different to me than he does in Fast and Furious. I did not remember he was in this until he pops up, and he kind of, like, I was like, wait, is that Paul Walker? And then I remembered I had seen him in the cast. I think that him being like the basketball player who, like, the basketball players, they all hit every shot, right? Like, no matter what David does, the shot goes in. And that's one of those things that reminds me of the Barbie world when it's perfect, right? Yep. Like that everything just works out perfectly for Barbie as she's walking through a world. And then when she loses that innocence, her feet go flat, and then all of a sudden the basketball doesn't drop anymore.
Exactly. Yep. It's a very similar moment to the Barbie thing where she starts to lose all of her in-universe abilities for sure. Yeah. So this is a year before she's all that for Paul Walker, where he's the second behind Freddie Prinze Jr.
Yeah, he's one of the friends.
He's one of the bros. But also before Fast and Furious, right?
Yeah, that was 2001.
Yeah. So yeah, this is like very like beginning stages of the Paul Walker nobe.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is in Varsity Blues a year later.
He's Lance. Yeah, and he's basically, Coach Lance in,
So, and I think like his acting style too, like it's sometimes a little off in Fast and Furious, especially the early ones, because he's so kind of like Keanu-y, where he's just like wooden.
He's got
it
like an
all
shucks demeanor that plays better in these teen comedies, but not when he's an adult, you know?
Yeah. Who played the jock dude in The Outside World? Was he anybody of note? Probably not
that I noted.
Would you have liked it better if Paul Walker played, like, if we had
Paul Walker in a wig for both or something?
To go back to Wizard of Oz, right, where we had the same actors play Dorothy's uncles and the Wicked Witch, like the same actress plays her. Like, would you have liked it if we had some of the actors from Pleasantville also show up in The Outside World?
I think I would have, definitely, especially because this actor who plays Mark Davis, the bro at the beginning, has been in nothing. He was in a Power Rangers movie and something else that I can't even see the title of, and this. Mm-hmm. He's been in three movies. Not much of a career, unfortunately, for Justin. I think that's a really clever idea if it's much more like the Wizard of Oz thing where they look the same. Although then you lose Jane Kaczmarek at the beginning and the end as the mom.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I love that final scene between Toby McGuire's whatever his name is, Mark.
David.
I think. David, Mark, whatever. And the mom. Like, I think that's such a beautiful scene.
Yeah.
And I love Jane Kaczmarek a lot. She was right around the time she was doing Malcolm in the Middle during this. Okay. So yeah.
That is a show. So, you know, it would be interesting, right? Like if they remade Pleasantville.
Yeah.
And it took place now, people would go back into a show like Malcolm in the Middle, right? That's
for sure.
Feel like also like I am saying that, and then I'm realizing WandaVision was very similar, right? WandaVision kind of did that. Later episodes went into that Malcolm in the Middle style.
That's show. Very true. Yeah. After starting in the 50s era with the I Love Lucy style. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember like WandaVision was so clever. It was the first of the Marvel shows on Disney Plus. And I remember thinking like they were really going to be experimenting with things. And then the last episode of WandaVision really just becomes like the same as every other superhero.
Yeah. Yeah,
and I think that they like lost what made, and I think that's kind of what set that phase of Marvel just kind of down the wrong path, where then everything felt very samey. And had it stuck with that format where it was really
just
format
let it be a singular premise to try to make it
but I was thinking a lot about WandaVision, and I'm sure WandaVision uses Pleasantville as a kind of, at least the way they produce Pleasantville as some inspiration.
This was the first film to be shot in full color this way and then degradated later to produce the black and white.
Yeah.
So this is the first time they experimented with this type of filmmaking. So all of the like colorization actually happens in reverse, where it was colored and they decolorized everything around it. Yeah.
Probably easier to do on the scenes where it's completely black and white, but where it starts being like 50-50 and mixed. I'm sure it was really hard.
You were talking about things looking fake. I think if you made this movie now, it would all be CGI and it wouldn't look as good.
Yeah, I mean, I think of WandaVision. WandaVision looked good. Mm. Yeah. I don't feel like that would be the issue, because it would just be the color thing. I really like how when they get out of the courtroom at the end of the movie,
then everything
is in full color.
It's beautiful.
It's like so bright and, you know, very like Barbie-ish, right? Where it's oversaturated. Yeah, I had something else that I wanted to comment on about this, and I love the
rain scene when he's like, it's just rain, and he's like standing in the rain, and he gets everybody to like feel rain for the first time. Like, I love that. That's so beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah. I know what I was going to talk about. I did like the rain also. I liked like anything that got them out of their narrative.
To steal from Westworld,
where it's like, oh, like these things that don't happen in this world, right? Like that, and rain is one of those interesting ones where it's like, oh yeah, I guess it doesn't ever rain on these sitcom shows. Like it's something you wouldn't think about.
Real fires in Pleasantville. It would just the firefighters wouldn't know what a fire was. It would just have to get a cat.
Yeah, that's the part I always remember from this movie. Like the number one thing I remember from Pleasantville besides the black and white to color is the cat scene. Yeah, where he yells about the cat. You talked about the way this movie was made and the way that the color was decolorized to give it the look of the black and white.
Mm-hmm.
One scene that I could not figure out how they made this, especially pre-CGI, is the scene where they're all shooting baskets and every single one is going in.
Oh, everyone goes in. Yeah, that's a great question. No idea. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure they probably like. Oh, never mind. That was going to be a really bad joke. Maybe they got real basketball players, though, is what I was going to say.
No, I mean, I'm sure that there's some sort of, like, you know, animation or some sort of trick. Yeah, but it reminded me of, I just watched Sherlock Jr. a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah.
And there is a scene where Buster Keaton is playing pool. And he hits every pool ball in like perfectly. And that's another one where I was watching that and I was like, well,
or it could just be an editing thing where they took as many shots as they needed to until everybody hit a shot and they just edited it together really fast.
I don't know. Like, I don't think so.
I don't know. I mean, maybe, I don't know how to,
but like maybe they edited them like individually doing it, but there's no way that they got a shot where they all hit it at the same time because you
hire Christian Laettner and you say, stand here, 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 and here. Mm-hmm. And then we edit all of your shots together to look.
Yeah, that actually is probably how they did it. I think like this is one of the early movies to come out on DVD. Like maybe there was a behind the scenes featurette on the DVD that I could watch. I talked about the apple earlier where they eat the apple.
I also love the food in this film.
Yeah. Well, I also really like the first time that they're at school.
Yeah.
And you see all the line of apples on the teacher's desk, and then she's like, the lesson is about Main Street and Elm Street. And that like one has houses on it and one doesn't, and one's longer. And then Reese Witherspoon's character says like, what's outside of Pleasantville? And again, that kind of breaks everybody's cycle where they're like, wait, what? Yeah. Again, because if you were watching the Pleasantville show, you might see 2 seconds in a classroom and like the stuff that's going on in the classroom, it is not about the lesson, right?
About anything actually important.
Right. It'd be about like what's advancing the story in the show.
Exactly. Yep.
And I think that's interesting to compare to, we see them in school before they get to Pleasantville where they're learning about global warming and stuff like that. And it's like, even the global warming stuff, like it makes sense that that's what they're learning about, but it is like very over the top, right? Where she's teaching them, where she's like, the temperature is going to raise 2.5 degrees. How many degrees difference do you think global temperatures have raised since 1998?
Depending on what part of the world you're in.
Global temperatures, global average, three to five degrees. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 3 to 5.
No, not even close. 3 to 5. I think the whole world would melt.
I don't know about that.
Earth's temperature has risen on average 0.11 degrees Fahrenheit per decade since the 1850s.
Interesting. Okay.
So
not that much. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. Evidence shows global warming from 1998 to present, with 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, and 2020 being the hottest years global. Oh man, this is depressing.
Oh man. Let's hoping I could just find that. This is not a pleasant topic, Zach.
I just wanted to know. She said 2.5 degrees, but no, I think 2.5 degrees would cause I think that's 1 degree difference they say would cause global calamity. I believe.
Interesting.
So, yeah, it looks like we've risen like 0.14 degrees.
I'm not a meteorologist or geologist. All right,
yeah, Jim can let us know. Jim Crumley can let us know. The bowling ball scene, you know, like I think that's another one that probably Soderbergh did, where we have the camera like on top of the bowling ball coming back, going down the gutter. And I, you know, this is when like the militia, you know, or like the January 6th
town people, council,
like,
right.
They start getting together where they're like, no, things are changing too much. There's too much progress.
They're changing too much. We want the good old days. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But one little touch that I thought was really great was they show the scoreboard for the bowling. Yeah. And one team, every team is a J name. Every person playing is a J.
I was about to say all their names start with J, but when he calls them all out individually, none of those names are on the board. He's like Roy and Jet, you know, what, and all these people that aren't actually on that board. So I was curious about that. Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
I wonder if all the people on the board are just like an Easter egg of people who were on the crew or something, you know?
Well, there was a second team below and the names were obscured. So I bet that was probably where they were.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we haven't. OK, so we haven't talked at all about the like bathtub scene where the mom character, Betty, where she discovers herself, right? Where she breaks her innocence for the first time.
That was a moment that reminded me of something that could have been in Barbie, but was in Poor Things.
That is very much like Poor Things. That's a great point.
I mean, Bella discovers it very much in the same way.
Yeah, one's at a kitchen table.
What a pleasure pleasuring himself can be.
Yeah, one's with a vegetable at the kitchen table and one is in the bathtub.
Yes, very similar scenes. Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, where she has such an explosive reaction that it explodes the tree outside.
Yep.
That hole is like, you know, if this was like the rewatchables, like most rewatchable scene, I do feel like that whole segment is probably the most rewatchable scene.
I really love the cutaways to William H. Macy, who can't go to sleep without his wife in the bed next to his bed, where he's just like tossing and turning because she's not in her proper place yet, so he can't go to sleep.
Yeah, he's so inept, he can't do anything for himself.
He can't do anything for himself.
Walks in, just, hey honey, I'm home. Like, where's my drink? Where's my dinner?
Where's my dinner? There was no dinner.
I think another thing that I noticed watching this that I didn't like that much is that, like, yes, this is about these two outsiders who come into Pleasantville and like show that, like, they break their innocence from the innocence they have in this world.
They
pop the bubble, but otherwise there's no real story, right? Like Marty in Back to the Future, he comes in and he introduces these new things. He introduces his parents, but he also has to figure out a way to get back to 1985.
And whereas, you know, during this, Bud/what's his name never David. Wants to go back. David doesn't really want to go back most of the time.
And they just kind of like live there and have things happen.
Right. Like Mary Sue decides not to go back at all, which I have a question about. Is that like, it's a reverse Barbie where she decides to stay instead of leave like Barbie does. So my question is, does she travel to different sitcoms when she gets on the bus?
Oh, well, don't they show her at like a college or something?
Oh, I guess they do. Yeah, on the steps of a college or something. Uh-huh. But like, is she traveling to other shows, or is she to break them out of their bubbles and their conventions? Or is she, or have they expanded the world of Pleasantville so much that just the universe of Pleasantville that there are now things outside of Pleasantville?
Yeah, she's in like Pleasantville the college years now.
Got it. Yeah. Oh, she's saved by the bell.
Okay. Yeah. My question is, what happens like David gets back home and she's not there?
Like, right, exactly. Like, what does the mom think? She just ran away? Like, how are you going to explain this one, buddy?
I think this is very similar to the conversation we had last week about Barbie, where it's just like, there's not really an answer to like some of these weird things. Like, is there a Barbie world for every person with a Barbie, or just
exactly? Is it different?
Just
I think part of the point is there's not really a goal or mission in the movie, because they want the main mission to be the accidental then intentional breaking of this town out of its bubble.
Yeah.
Like breaking the viewer out of like thinking that, you know, not the good old day mentality makes any sense.
Yeah. Like, I just feel like what we end up lacking at that, though, is that we lack any sort of like character arc for anybody in this movie.
I think Jeff Daniels has a pretty good arc, and so does the mom. Like,
yeah. I mean, their arc is that they discover they're in love with each other, even though
they wind up together at the end.
Yeah.
They wind up together at the end, which is very cute.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess that arc is like enough of a character arc for a 20-minute sitcom and not enough of an arc for a 2-hour and 4-minute movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, I do think that this movie is a little long, but I can't tell you at all where I would cut it.
Yeah, I think it felt like it mattered a little bit at times. And I think especially because there's no overall arc besides
and I think that's
teach have these people learn things, have the conservative people in the town revolt against it, show them that it's okay, and have the whole world accept progress and then go home.
It's about arc. The acceptance of progress and the acceptance of change. And I think that while I like that, like, it's a little hard to spend that much time in that world without something more to it.
That's why Back to the Future is a superior movie, because Back to the Future has that and a story.
Yeah.
And there's there's no actual story in this movie.
That's fair.
In my eyes, like, Back to the Future is my favorite movie. So saying Pleasantville is not as good as Back to the Future is like,
it's not saying a lot.
Yeah, that's not saying much, but that was something I noticed. Something else that I noticed is, well, it's not even about the movie, but it's kind of a little bit of a meta analysis about the movie, is the fact that this movie, the only way to watch it was to rent it. It is not on any streaming service.
Oh, yeah, that's a bummer. Yeah.
And I think this movie,
I really love that they're fighting over a TV remote that you can't turn on the TV without the remote, which wasn't really a thing for TVs in the 90s that I can recall. No. Every TV I ever owned, you could turn it on. Maybe you couldn't do the channels very well on the TV, but you could definitely turn it on the TV itself.
Yeah, well, he does say it's like a fancier TV, that maybe it's like the one that, not Don Rickles, but Don Knotts, like, gives to them. But, I did laugh. And I laughed at they're like fighting over the one TV, and now it'd be like, okay, fine, I'll watch that on my iPad. Like, I can watch it on my laptop.
Right, exactly. Well, she says they have a TV upstairs, but something, yeah.
Yeah, two TVs, you must be rich.
Two TV problem, yeah.
But I think, like, the fact this movie is, I'm like shocked this movie isn't streaming on Netflix or on Max or something. Because I think if this was on Netflix, I think that this I think Gen Z would love this movie.
I think people would rediscover this movie every week. Yeah. I do think that this should be streaming somewhere for sure.
Yeah. I don't necessarily think that it should be like remade or updated.
No.
If you were in a Pleasantville situation, this was going to be our one last thing, but we'll just talk about it now. What show would you want to be trapped in?
Ooh, good question. If I was in a Pleasantville situation,
it's like a good icebreaker, I feel.
That's
like
really hard. I mean, certainly it would. Ted Lasso. Ted Lasso would be fun.
Okay.
Yeah. I would be a towel boy for Richmond. That'd be fun. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would be in the Ted Lasso universe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Get
yelled
at by Roy Kent every day. That'd be great.
The first one that comes to mind for me is 24. Which I don't
see.
Think
no, it's too dangerous.
Right.
I don't want to be in any of the universes where I might die.
Yeah.
No thanks.
Characters
I don't want to be in Game of Thrones. I don't want to be in Lord of the Rings. I don't want to be a Shogun. No thanks.
I'm trying to think of like other Westworld could be fun.
That's another one where you could die. You would absolutely die in Westworld.
Yeah.
Veep would be really fun, because then I wouldn't have to leave DC.
Brendan, I have bad news for you. You already live in Veep, essentially.
Who are we kidding? You would want to live in the current universe.
Yeah.
You would get to hang out in LA with celebrities every day.
What about living in would you live in Euphoria?
I've never seen it, so probably not. But
Very dramatic high school show.
No, if I were gonna, I think I lived through Freaks and Geeks, so I'm good there on high school shows. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of like shows from the early 2000s or like late 90s. But there's nothing that's like quite
another really popping.
I mean, I guess it would be like going and living in Friends, right? Like that's essentially what this would be like, going
go live with Monsieur Spade in France and solve crimes. No,
Friends, not Friends.
Oh, I thought you said France.
No, Friends. Like living in Monica, living with Monica and Chandler and Ross.
Nah.
What about Curb? Would you go live in the Curb universe?
No, but you would. I know you would.
Yeah,
you want to hang out in LA. You love LA.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be
and
fun.
You love looking for celebrities, so there you go.
Mm-hmm. All right. Anything else? I like that we get like a reverse Birds and the Bees.
That's good. I do love that. I love that conversation. It's great.
Yeah. And the whole conversation about can't win them all, and it's like, That's but they like, what was it like, that they don't ever lose and they don't ever tie, so they literally do win them all.
That's what they call winning them all.
Yeah.
Yep.
I thought that was good. All right. Yeah. I don't know. I don't know if I have anything else.
Let's move it to the box office game.
All right. Other times when this movie's come up, this came up all the way back episode 60. Stefan suggested it. Jeff Daniels being the connection there. It did make the finals, but it lost to Sorcerer. But the final four that week was Pleasantville, Easy Rider, Sorcerer, and Bullet. So Bullet being the one.
Bullet being the only thing we haven't done.
We haven't done from that final four.
Sorcerer got like such a resurgence of acknowledgement, like after 2 years after we did that podcast.
True.
Yep. Like we missed the Sorcerer wave.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. It's interesting. There's certain movies that we've done that have had that kind of resurgence. Like I was thinking a lot about Insomnia when I was watching the last season of True Detective, because it's so similar to Insomnia.
Yeah.
Also, Stefan suggested this movie, episode 116, The Hours. Jeff Daniels. Yeah. I don't even remember Jeff Daniels being in The Hours. And Suburban 1950s.
Mm-hmm.
Peggy Sue Got Married, I suggested this one. Yep. And then Revolutionary Road, just a couple weeks ago, I suggested this one as well. The 1950s world. And then last week, LT suggested this one. Yes, she got the rare guest point off of Barbie. Very good suggestion of Pleasantville. I think that I'm surprised that it was not talked about more as being a connection to Barbie. So,
yep.
All right. So this movie opened October 23rd, 1998. So the week before Halloween, opened at number one, the week that it came out. Other movies that came out that week, a movie called Soldier, not Universal Soldier, just Soldier. I don't know what that is. Apt Pupil. I do sort of remember that, but I've never seen it. And the number two movie that week, the second week release, was Practical Magic. That's another one that I feel like
I remember that one. Yeah, Nicole Kidman, Sandra Bullock, they're witches. Yep. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. That's one of those films where they dance around a kitchen counter singing.
Oh, okay.
There was like a whole slew of those in the 90s where the female characters all sang and danced while cleaning the kitchen. Yeah. Nice. Okay. It's one of those.
Nothing else that we've done also in theaters at the same time, but I do just want to point out that Small Soldiers was the number 21 in theaters. It had been in theaters for a while, but I feel like Small Soldiers would have been a good connection off of Barbie. That's why I bring that up.
Came up last week. Yeah.
Oh, good. Yep. And Saving Private Ryan was in its 14th week of release. And it's number 14 on the list. Yeah. Pleasantville did drop to number two the following week. When the movie Vampires came out.
Yep.
So that makes sense. Halloween weekend, Vampires would be number one.
Vampires, man.
Yep.
What do you do?
All right. I don't think there's any other major box office things as I'm looking at this. I am looking at 1998 movies that we've done. This is our fifth 1998 movie. So welcome to the Five Timers Club. We did Thin Red Line, Mask of Zorro, Sliding Doors way back early in the podcast, and Big Lebowski. All right. Get things kicked off with the feedback section, and Jenny, the music teacher, kicks things off. And she says, I love this movie dearly. The number one reason is because it introduced me to Joan Allen. I became an instant big fan. It's also one of the last performances of the great J.T. Walsh. He is good in this movie. I was worried a little that this movie wouldn't hold up in today's culture. Boy, was I wrong. This movie is more relevant than it was originally. 4.5 stars.
Nice. Yeah, I think we pretty much agree with all of that. I think that this movie is important.
They could call this Floridaville, maybe. we didn't talk too much about J.T. Walsh, but he is perfect as the
he's a wonderful
as much
villain.
Of a villain as you can get in this, or antagonist as you can get.
He was always so good at playing this type of character. Just, you know, basically an asshole.
And he doesn't enter the movie until like an hour in, and when he enters, you immediately know that like this character's
this guy's the asshole. All right, Travis writes in and says, this movie just did not work for me. I am not confident I even fully understand when people change to color. I thought McGuire's performance was lackluster. All that being said, it was enjoyable. It was enjoyable 2-hour watch. I just expect this to be a forgettable watch. 3 stars. So, yeah, we never really talked about this yet. Like, what I think it's different for each person what it is that makes them turn to color. Mm-hmm. Like, some of it is an emotional moment. Some of it is a moment where they find their purpose. Some of it is a physical moment. Mm-hmm. Like, I know for Bud, it's/David, it's when he literally punches Whitey in the face.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
He did steal Whitey's cookies. Those are Whitey's cookies, which I really caught me on this watch when Don Knotts goes off on the fact that he's messing up Whitey's cookies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's changing.
And I was like, okay, that's a little on the nose.
Oh yeah,
for true. The commentary, okay. The fact that he stole Whitey's cookies and is messing up Whitey's life. Yeah, that's a. It's a little on the nose, but mm-hmm. there you go.
I mean, I don't think it's as on the nose as signs in the town that say no coloreds.
That's fair. But, you know, I mean, I think it depends on the character, but I do think that there doesn't seem to be it's never explained what the through line of the logic is. Basically.
Yeah, I just think it's that they're losing their innocence in some way.
Got it.
And I do really like how it's treated. That it's you know, when the people go to the doctors and the different ways that people try to deal with this outbreak that's going on.
It'll go away. I don't want it to go away. Yeah.
Yeah. And instead it's I think you could also, there's probably a read on this where it's the AIDS epidemic, right? Especially because it's a lot of people get it through sex, not exclusively, sure. But a lot of characters, they have sex and then they come out with the color. I think you could read that on that level too, which I think one is less on the nose than some of the.
I think
others.
There's a few different metaphors for this film for sure mm-hmm. That you could draw parallels to. It's like we talked about with the Barbie speech, like I talked about last week, is really you can apply your own need for acceptance to that mm-hmm. film, and I think you can to this film too.
And I'll be curious, Travis, check back in with us in a year and let us know if you remember anything. Because I feel like this movie,
it's with you.
I actually think this movie is not forgettable. I think there's a lot of pretty memorable stuff in this, but
it's a grower.
I'm almost the opposite where it is an enjoyable 2-hour watch, but I think there's times when it drags for me. Mm-hmm. So, my librarian has said, I did not watch Pleasantville this week, but I've seen it a couple times before and I gave it 3.5. So not
there you go. For
my librarian.
Nice. Robbie says, I enjoyed this movie quite a bit. It starts off as a nice, quote-unquote, entering a new world and giving people new experiences movie, and then takes quite a turn, and then comes back with a good ending that sends everyone home happy. It touched on a lot of important topics, and I think it showcased them well for the most part. 4 stars for Robbie.
I think you handled and showcased that email very well, Brendan.
Yeah, sorry.
4 stars. That's fine. It's 4 stars from Robbie. No, I do think it is the tale of two movies.
I agree.
And yeah, I definitely did not remember how much this movie dives into social commentary. Yeah. We've talked a lot about social commentary of the world and the United States back then, the United States now, the United States in the 50s, but also social commentary of this is what the media, this is what was considered very good TV shows, right? When here are all the flaws of this TV show. And I think that.
Exactly.
Again, that's where I get that, you just needed black characters in the movie. To make
I mean, they are metaphorically the colored characters.
Yeah. Have characters of color who are not in the Pleasantville world. If they want to say Pleasantville is all white, that is a problem. Okay. But Pleasantville, the movie outside of Pleasantville, the TV show, that is also all white. And so I think
that's
it makes that comment. That's where it makes that commentary ring a little hollow for me. So
here's an interesting question. So this movie is remade today.
Mm-hmm.
Does this movie make more sense or if this movie were remade today, would it star 2 African-American actors who, when they go into the black and white world, transform from African-American to white, and over the course of the movie, while they're in the alternate world, they turn back into African-American characters? Does that work better?
No, I don't think that. I think if this movie was made now, I don't think you're going into a Leave It to Beaver type world anyways. Okay. If it was made now, you're going into you're going to Friends or something like that. You're going to sitcom from that time. And even then, I think you're not even having to go back as far. I think they would pick some TV show that is going into The Office, right? Something a little, even a little bit more recent and kind of pointing out the flaws in that. Like, I think you could do an updated version of this pretty easily.
Right.
And make some commentary about the media, about the way things are portrayed. And I mean, I think that's really kind of what Barbie does, right? Barbie does the opposite,
for sure.
Where Barbie is saying, look at this doll that people are still playing with. And here are like the gender stereotypes and the issues that are raised from Barbie and from this doll, and gender issues that are in this world as well.
For sure.
So maybe you don't need to do Pleasantville remade, but Pleasantville is a movie that if I heard they were remaking Pleasantville like they're remaking The Crow, I would not be upset about remaking Pleasantville. I think this movie, there's a lot to be mined from this idea.
Idea, yeah.
All right. Ron says, there's so much charm coming from this movie. This was a blind spot for me, but I could see extra depth in a rewatch at some point. Mm-hmm. 4 stars.
Nice. Yeah,
and there you go. I could be Jim's too, since Ron's was short.
Yeah, go for it.
Ron, yeah, you should rewatch it. Rewatch movies that are similar to it. Rewatch Back to the Future and see how this compares to Back to the Future. And then Jim Crumley says, Pleasantville was better than expected. It was fun to return to young Tobey Maguire and Reese Witherspoon. This movie does a good job at blending surface-level gags about Pleasantville, color, and sex with a deeper social commentary. 4 stars. Side note, is Stephen Fishback a Pleasantville fan? I don't know. Is there a reason why? Is there a Stephen Fishback thing? Is there a fishy given out in this movie?
I didn't get it. Yeah, I don't get the question. Sure.
Yeah. We can tweet at Stephen and ask him.
Was there prominent cinnamon in this movie?
Lead-filled cinnamon in this movie? Should we have had Stephen Fishback on as our guest for this? He probably is he would have tons of good media reads on this. He's very media literate. Sure. Jim's hero of the movie is David/Bud.
There you go. Right. Boom. Nailed it.
Okay. All right.
First?
Me?
Wait, I'm going to let you go first.
Okay. I'm 4. Which is actually a little lower than I thought I would be coming in. Like, thought I would be before I watched this movie. It is just that some of that stuff that I can't get past is hard to get past. It does make the commentary ring a little hollow. I also, like, the lack of a story. Like, they're just... It needed to be that he needed to invent the battery to put in the remote or something. I don't know. I mean, then it's really close to Back to the Future, but there's no story to get back. It's just sort of like then he saves everything and Don Knotts brings him back and doesn't bring his sister back.
It's fair.
But I do like the weirdness. Like, I love that it's just like, what happens? Like, she never came back. Are we going to
she never came back.
It's sort of like Doc Brown never coming back at the end of Back to the Future 3.
Right.
We just never address it. So do you think at some point she does come back? Like a year later, she's spent a year in Pleasantville.
Yeah, and I mean, how? Maybe she teaches people. I don't know.
Yeah, she clicks her heels together.
Good. So, no place like home.
Yeah. No, I think that there's no place like Pleasantville. I think this is like a very solid movie. It is like we didn't talk too much about like the fun stuff in this, but Jim pointed out.
There's a lot of fun stuff in this, especially in the beginning.
The like giant stack of pancakes and the ham steak.
Like, don't forget the bacon and the ham steak. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's great.
The other thing I think this movie was missing, at least in the first half, was a laugh track. I think you needed a laugh track.
Yeah, that's a good point. I like that. Yeah, that's a good idea. I'm a 4.5. I was really close last night watching this to like what you call the warm fuzzies, where like, I think that we talked enough about what doesn't work in this film that holds me back slightly from giving it a full 5. Mm-hmm. But I do think that this is a really, really great film. I think that there's a lot that still holds up that's really important about it. I think that there are really great performances. The movie is still like a really great watch. Even if last night I felt like it was a little long, that could just be me.
I felt like it was long as well.
But the other thing I would say is that, you know, you talked about it earlier. This is currently in my number one slot of 1998. The three other movies that are in my top 4 between Saving Private Ryan, Truman Show, and Big Lebowski are all-time movies for me. I mean, and I would slot each one of them at number one for 98 immediately after watching them, just because I'm fickle like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if we did Truman Show next week, I would just move it to my number one on the list.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
it very much feels like a pairing with this movie.
Yeah, sure. It does. So, yeah, I mean, I think that you know, it deserves its spot right now. And it's not a perfect movie, but it's a 4.5.
Yeah.
That's going to average us out to a 4.11, which will be a 4 on the ye olde Letterboxd.
Yeah, and I do think, like this, like you said, this movie's a grower, and I think this is a movie that, like, the further away from it you get, your memory of it is, like, you remember really good things about this movie. So it's very easy to,
and I think that that's
like
how we talk about TV shows. Like, we try, like, TV shows that we really loved, we don't necessarily think about the really bad or clunky moments of a season 1, 2, 3, or 4 of the Game of Thrones before it quote unquote got bad. But I mean, because we only think about the really good stuff from the
really
good seasons
stuff.
Of a TV show. You know what I mean? So like it's kind of like that. Like watching a movie like this is kind of like that. I think that you'll focus on the good stuff. Yeah.
Another kind of similar idea to Pleasantville is the finale of She-Hulk. It's like commentary on media and Disney Plus. Because I was thinking, I'm like, could you make a version of Pleasantville that is like the abundance of content that we have today? Like a commentary on that. I know there's so many choices and so many shows. And instead of being trapped in one show, they're trapped in Netflix and they're jumping between all of these different shows.
That's a Black Mirror episode, my friend.
Yeah, I do think if it's not.
It should be a Black Mirror episode. Was a Black Mirror episode?
Was that the Choose Your Own Adventure? One?
No, not the Choose Your Own Adventure. Oh. The one with with what's her name, where she's playing herself, who's playing herself,
Selma
who's
Hayek,
playing herself.
Yeah,
Selma Hayek.
That was a good episode.
I liked that episode.
Black Mirror, I think, is a show that ages in your memory. You're like, oh, Black Mirror is so good, and you forget how many bad episodes of Black Mirror.
Yeah, there's so many bad episodes.
Black Mirror also that is a show I would not want to be pleasant filled into.
No, thank you. Nope. Good.
Yeah, even though at times we are in a Black Mirror episode. All right. Brendan, who's your hero of the movie?
Joan Allen. She really stood out to me on this watch. I think she's great. I have to agree with Jenny, the music teacher. I think that she was the best part of the movie for me on this watch. So
nice. What is the Reese Witherspoon's character name in Pleasantville, the show?
Mary Sue.
Mary Sue.
Don't say anything about Mary Sue.
Mary Sue is going to be my hero of the movie because she is the one who introduces Sin into this world. We see the apple.
Okay.
We see her going to Lover's Lane and teaching Paul Walker all of her moves and making him get colorful. I think, like, you know, without her, she's the disruptor of this world. Otherwise, like, things would have they would have stayed in their cycles. And instead, Pleasantville went from a black and white show to a, full color, newer version of this show. So,
So, all right. Well, let me jump into my one last thing then, because my one last thing is literally about this character being named Mary Sue.
Okay.
Mary Sueism. Do you know what a Mary Sueism is, Zach?
I do because of The Force Awakens.
Yes. So, Mary Sueism, for anyone who doesn't know, is basically what is called in fan culture a Mary Sue character is a character archetype in fiction, usually a young woman who is often portrayed as quote unquote inexplicably competent across all domains. So this term, Mary Sueism, actually began being popularized in the mid 90s by writers of Star Trek fan fiction who would basically insert these all-knowing, all-seeing, all-important characters into their fan fiction who would basically get to interact with all the people on board the starship and fly the ship and be the hero. And a lot of times this character was portrayed as in the fan fiction as a female. This term, Mary Sueism, sort of got co-opted in recent popular culture. But my question is, Zach, do you feel like by definition is Mary Sue in this film a Mary Sue? Is she inexplicably competent at turning Pleasantville into a more tolerable place?
No, I don't think so.
Is the Mary Sue Bud?
It might be Bud because Bud like saves every he has like the like when he gets the mirror from his mom or his TV mom, right? Like he just kind of like he brings peace and acceptance to Pleasantville, like kind of out of nowhere, like sort of Deus Ex Machina.
And the reason I call him, I actually wanted to turn it into Bud is the Mary Sue, is because literally this is his fan fiction of what he would do where he inserted into Pleasantville. Remember, he's the one that's obsessed with this TV show.
Right.
And creating his own quizzes with about it with his friends. He's probably writing Pleasantville fan fiction up in his bedroom. So he's literally living a Mary Sue fan fiction of what would happen if I were a character in Pleasantville. So I think that that's, I think that's really interesting.
That is interesting.
Her character is named Mary Sue, but Bud is actually the Mary Sue of the story.
He's like the rosebud of this idea. Well, Brendan, that is such an interesting idea that you skipped connections to get to your one last thing to talk about.
Well, because you brought up Mary Sue, so I was I was trying to keep the conversation going.
I see. Okay, I thought
because
you
made
really
Mary Sue your Mary Sue your hero of the movie. So
all right. So you're one next to last thing, basically.
Yeah, one next to last thing.
All right. connection. So we've talked a lot about the connections to Barbie. Was there anything that we haven't brought up that you would say is a connection to Barbie?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about the convertibles and the pink cars and all of that.
I mean, the books with, like, the
oh,
library
the
books.
Library. Yeah, they go to the library and everybody's obsessed with the library. Remember, mm-hmm. Ken goes to the library to look for books about trucks?
Yeah. And then the whole like second half of the movie being about the men who want to retake their town.
Exactly.
Right? They have like the they have like the Kens come to. They really are like the Kens that are coming
they
together
really
to
are.
Be like, no, we need to get our like we need to take over the town and make it the
exactly.
way we want it.
Yep. Mojo Dojo Casa House.
Yes. I have no idea what we would do for our title connection. Like,
I don't have a good one.
Do we want to say like Into a Colorful World or From a Colorful World? Because I think like the idea of like the flashy colors, it like what that represents in both
how
movies.
About is it what about like turning everything pink?
Yeah, but it's not. I mean, what about splash of color?
Okay, splash of color works. Yeah,
because we have splashes.
Oh yeah, because
with
of the
water
because of the production design.
Yeah.
And I think both films were nominated for production design. I believe.
Oh, I didn't
Oscars,
even look.
So.
Pleasantville was nominated for anything in the.
It
Oscars.
Was nominated for a couple of Oscars. Yeah.
Okay. Nice. All right. Splash of color. I think that's fun.
Yep. Okay. Great.
So. Before we get to other connections from this year, one thing I did want to bring up is that we kind of stumbled our way into a theme month. Actually, I should have saved this for Movie Map, but oh well. Just like you, I'm skipping ahead. The last three movies that we've done, including Pleasantville, Pleasantville, Barbie, and Poor Things, all are like updates and like very close movie maps to the Wizard of Oz.
Yes, they are all Wizard of Oz
adjacent,
yeah,
right?
Adjacent,
and I was thinking, depending on what we pick next, like we could have a theme month that is Wizard of Oz movie map theme month, right?
Yeah, we're March to Oz.
Yeah, we're all March to Oz, exactly. We're all four of the movies that we do for this month are like someone going into a world that like that is going from black and white to color, essentially for going from black and white to color, either like literally or philosophically, metaphorically. So,
and now I wish I hadn't watched Lynch Oz already because that would actually be really good.
Well, but I think it's like that is like that's I haven't seen that, but I'm imagining that's like a that's not it's a documentary. That's not a movie.
Yeah,
that
it is
like
a
an Oz type. Like it's not that like
that's
Oz archetype
story,
where it's like a character going into a new world.
Right.
So just something to keep in mind as we're picking for next week. Do we want to pick something that's like Wizard of Ozzy? That could complete our month of March to Oz, as you call it.
I prefer Wizard of Coach rather than Wizard of Oz.
What's Wizard of what is that reference? Oh, okay. All right. Other people got
Coach
that,
versus Ozzy. Forget it.
Yeah. That's a deep cut. There you go. That is a deep cut. So yes, Wizard of Oz movie map month.
Was bad and I messed up the joke anyway. So
that's
obviously,
what other connections to other movies from this year do you have?
We
like
talked a little bit about the Poor Things stuff. You know, the sexual awakening happening all throughout Pleasantville that happens in Poor Things. I keep doing that.
You did.
Maybe we're gonna do Past Lives next week. I don't know.
Yeah. We don't. I don't think we have any any actors that we're doubling back to from this year.
Don't believe so. No.
But we do have a time period, right? That we're circling back to the 1950s from Revolutionary Road.
Yep.
In that same like 50s, you know, everything's perfect
aesthetic,
in the 50s suburbia. Yep. And you know, we've also had a lot of like period pieces. All this isn't quite a period piece, but you know, right. American Gangster, Devil and Blue Dust, Chinatown, Nice Guys, all period pieces.
Yep.
I don't have any other major connections. I mean, I also with Poor Things, we had black and white to color.
Yeah, that's very true.
Adding color to that world. So,
yeah, not a lot else.
Nope. Okay. And then, I mean, my movie map is Wizard of Oz.
Yeah, obviously.
If you had
it's Wizard of Oz. I looked a couple of times. I didn't see anything else that really jumped out at me.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, Reese was in Wild, which we did last year.
Reese is in the four timers club now. I looked. I thought maybe she was in the five timers. She's still in the four timers.
Well,
club.
Maybe next week.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there are some moments in Forrest Gump that are similar to some of the ideas in Pleasantville.
And that uses black and white and color and sort of
Mm-hmm. And some trick photography too. So.
Yep.
All right. Well, do you have another one last thing, or is that your?
No, I did mine already. You go for it.
All right. Well. My one last thing. I mean, I did think about having the Wizard of Oz movie map month be my one last thing, but I will just call out the cover of Across the Universe that we get over the credits.
Yep.
It was nice. Yeah, I thought it was a very good cover, and reminded me that we did Across the Universe once upon a time.
It did remind me that we did Across the Universe once upon a time. Yeah.
All right. Well, with that, should we figure out what we're going to be watching next?
Absolutely.
All right. So, will Wizard of Oz movie map month continue? One more time. We will see. I didn't read any of this stuff at the top of the podcast. I think we just started getting into things, Brendan, when we were talking. But do send in your feedback to us at Ladder Movie on Twitter and Instagram, movieladder@gmail.com, the movie ladder on Letterboxd. Once we do pick our movie, send in that feedback, send in your score, next movie suggestions. Sorry, I did not say at the top of the podcast. We will be spoiling Pleasantville, and it is streaming rental. So if you haven't seen it, you can rent it and watch it, or you could skip ahead to the timestamp in the description of this podcast, which is what you're hearing now. There we go.
Everything that's happening now is happening now.
Right, yes. Very much like messing with the timeline. All right. Jenny, the music teacher, kicks us off in the listener suggestion. She has Legally Blonde.
Yep.
It is still an excellent connection for the transformation from perceived ignorance to perceived brilliance. Also, of course, Reese Witherspoon. That Legally Blonde is probably Reese Witherspoon's Apex Mountain, unless you consider her.
Maybe she stayed in Pleasantville to become Elle Woods. We'll never know.
She's learning. Yep. All right. Travis says, for next week, I will suggest a movie that uses a remote control in a prominent way. Click.
I'm shocked if that's not on your list, because I know you like
it. It is not on my list. No, it is.
Really?
I do love Click.
Though. Oh, I think you like the Click. Yeah.
I do like Click. It's just not on my list. Megan Librarian has The Ice Storm. Joan Allen plays Toby Maguire's mom. This is also about very much about suburbia, perfect suburbia lifestyle.
Yeah, or breaking
on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Seabiscuit, Gary Ross and Tobey Maguire together again.
Plus Soderbergh helped with Seabiscuit, I believe, as well.
Okay. So, man, they must be like roommates or something. They work together.
Yeah, I think they're just really, really good friends. So.
Nice. And a movie that has been podcasted about recently, but we would watch it in 1X, and that is The Hunger Games, the first Hunger Games. Yep. Gary Ross directs a movie about a very different type of TV show. Yes, I do think there's a lot of, commentary on TV on both.
Yep. So. There you go.
All right, Robbie taking one off of my list. That is The Truman Show.
Yeah.
About a TV show, about a relationship with TV. Very prescient. I would imagine that we would be having discussions about The Truman Show and how many things that it got right about where TV and media was going.
Yeah.
I also feel like it's a twin movie to Pleasantville because it came out the same year.
Yep.
And it is the other half of Dumb and Dumber, right? We have Jeff Daniels in Pleasantville. We have Jim Carrey in The Truman Show.
It's a great point.
And his other one, Last Action Hero, I think this was just covered on Blank Check.
Fantastic episode, yeah. How Did This Get Made, guys?
Get some connections to Blank Check. It's going inside of media, going inside of a TV world. I think that's one that did not pop up for me. That is a great suggestion. Yep.
Great suggestion.
All right, Ron has Spider-Man, the original. David and Peter Parker, Pre-Bite, are similar style characters played by Tobey Maguire, dorky kids. I would imagine we would have a certain guest back for that episode if we did Spider-Man. A big fan of that movie. Next one, Election. Reese Witherspoon is a high school girl. Election is on my pre-November watch list to watch before the election.
Election was on my list.
So I do want to watch that. Also, there's a lot of commentary in Election about not just high school, but commentary of the political system. And then finally, Cruel Intentions. Reese Witherspoon again as a high school girl, this time as a non-promiscuous character.
Election also has some social commentary that would be very interesting to revisit that wasn't really discussed at the time. That is more relevant now. Yeah.
That was what I said. But I agree. I'm glad we're on the same page about that. All right. Anything on Cruel Intentions, Brendan?
No.
Okay. It is based on, isn't it based on Shakespeare?
Was it?
Or something. It is based on some sort of literary text.
I think it's Great Expectations.
Ah, okay. Yes, that's probably what it is. All right. Jim has Roadhouse, 1989. Like Pleasantville, it's about people living in a world that never really existed and an outsider coming in to try and keep that world from breaking. The movie also shares seven crew members from a music department. very nice, Jim. Roadhouse, blank check. It is a blind spot for me. So, and I know the remake just came out. So we could do Roadhouse for the next 2 weeks. We could do Roadhouses.
Yep.
And then Jim also has The Truman Show, is in many ways the bizarro version of Pleasantville. Instead of two real-world interlopers slowly unraveling the fabric of lives of people who don't realize they are in the artificial Pleasantville world, in The Truman Show, our antagonist is the only one who doesn't know his world is artificial.
Yep.
Until this week, I did not think about Pleasantville being such a twin movie.
It's a great twin movie.
With The Truman Show.
To Truman Show, yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, I get to go first this week. Yay, that's exciting. Obviously, I wrote down. So how about breaking the barrier between the TV world / film world and the quote-unquote real world, Asteroid City?
Yeah.
Has people coming in and out of the two worlds quite frequently. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Also, a film set during the time of the sitcoms of this era that Pleasantville was set in, being the Ricardos.
Oh, yeah. And that's like going behind the camera, almost. Yep,
exactly, going behind the camera. How about Tobey Maguire reading a list of rules to a bunch of people who don't really understand them? Cider House rules?
Is that what he does in that movie?
Yeah.
I've never seen it. I don't know. He just reads rules the whole movie? That doesn't sound
apparently
very fun.
Yeah. Reese Witherspoon in an entertaining biopic, Walk the Line.
Maybe that's her Apex Mountains, Walk the Line.
Could be. Oh, what else? Another one where they cross the boundaries of TV and Hollywood, quote unquote, behind the scenes, Bewitched. The Will Ferrell, Nicole Kidman.
Yep, oh, Bewitched. Man. Will Ferrell getting so much love on this podcast. Well, one, like getting so much run on this podcast this year.
Four. I want to do a fifth one. Do I have a fifth one that hasn't been said already? It's a question. I'm looking here, looking. No, I don't really have one that hasn't already been said. So there we go. I'm stuck at four for this week.
Okay. One listener suggestion that I had written down because it came in on social media.
Never mind.
It didn't get suggested. Mm. Was Stay Tuned by Shut Up Tim suggested Stay Tuned. It's Shut Up Tim's suggestion.
Okay.
He suggested it, he just didn't write it in, and I had it on my list to mention from him. But Stay Tuned is one that I remember renting from the video store all the time. And it is about people who get like a satellite dish, and then they go into all of these different shows. It's like John Ritter. It's one of those like classic video store movies.
Gotcha.
So,
interesting.
Yeah.
I feel like I probably saw that back in the day.
I'm sure you did. Yeah. No, it's one of those that like everybody rented, I feel like. But it's so similar to Pleasantville, where people get sucked into the TV. So I wanted to make sure I had that in my notes. I wanted to make sure mention that. All right. Now from my list, the first, Hunger Games was taken. I did have to move that off of my list. So I had The Hunger Games, Truman Show, and Election all taken off of my list. The first one I will do is Blast from the Past. Yes. This is Brendan Fraser and Alicia Silverstone. Brendan Fraser, it's kind of like a remake of Encino Man in a way, where he grows up in a bomb shelter. And he's a man out of time. Yeah. So I think like that kind of fits in a way, the Wizard of Oz,
he enters
a new world.
Yep.
Next one I will do is Alice in Wonderland.
There you go. Good job.
New world.
Which one do you want to do? The
animated one. I did the classic. Next one I'll do is Tobey Maguire entering a new world. Goes through a portal along with Andrew Garfield and Willem Dafoe and other people. Spider-Man No Way Home.
Nice. Love it.
Yep. And let's see. Let's just do a movie that's like, you know, 50s suburbia ain't all it's cracked up to be. Far From Heaven.
Yep.
A bunch of times. Todd Haynes. 50s suburbia might be all it's cracked up to be. This is one that's like all about nostalgia. One I didn't like when I saw it in high school, but I would check it out again. That is Last Picture Show.
Yes.
And I'm going to throw one more on there. That is Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle. Characters going into a different world, being sucked into the TV. This time they're sucked into video games, which I do think like being sucked into video games could be the update to Pleasantville.
True.
So I'll throw that on my list.
All right. Let me take it from the top here. We have Legally Blonde, Click, The Ice Storm, Seabiscuit, Hunger Games, The Truman Show, Last Action Hero, Spider-Man, Election, Cruel Intentions, Roadhouse, Truman Show again, Stay Tuned, Asteroid City, Being the Ricardos, Cider House Rules, Walk the Line, Bewitched, Blast from the Past, Alice in Wonderland, No Way Home, Far from Heaven, Last Picture Show, and Jumanji, Welcome to the Jungle. Zach, you get to go first.
All right, I got to throw Truman Show on there.
Yeah, I figured.
Yeah.
From the listener picks, it's tough. I was thinking a lot about Election while watching this last night. Mm-hmm. But I've also like, I don't think I've ever actually seen Legally Blonde. I think I've just seen bits and pieces of it. I think I'm going to throw Legally Blonde in there for the Reese.
All right. I am kind of sad that we aren't going to have Election in the finals, but you know, did not get voted in. I think Last Action Hero would have been a really good one, as well as The Hunger Games.
Yeah.
So good job. I mean, a lot of the listener picks.
Yeah, good listener picks.
Good ones for those. From your list, I'm going to go with Bewitched. I think Bewitched is supposed to be a little bit of like a commentary on the Bewitched.
Correct. Yeah.
On the show. So.
Yep. Yeah. And from your list, it's been a long time since I've rewatched the Disney classic Alice in Wonderland. I think that this is you were talking about capping off our journey through Oz. What better way than, you know, the obvious pairing of, you know, journey back to Oz with Alice in Wonderland.
Journey into Wonderland.
Very close. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to go All with right. Alice in Wonderland.
Cool.
All right, so our final four are Truman Show, Legally Blonde, Bewitched, and Alice in Wonderland, the Disney classic. Not
Bewitched. Bewitched is directed by Nora Ephron too.
I'd
forgotten about that. And the letterbox point was not suggested by anybody. Do you want to guess what the letterbox or do you see what the letterbox point is for this?
I didn't see it. I missed it.
It is American Beauty. So Suburbia ain't all it's cracked up to be.
Fair enough. Yeah, you know what? It's not. It's really not. And he does. I was going to make a comment. I forgot about it. I did write down that Tobey Maguire kind of has the same hair going at the beginning of this movie as the character in American Beauty.
Mm.
Who's the photographer kid?
Oh, is it Jim Caviezel?
Is that Jim Caviezel? Okay, yeah.
I think it is. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, Wes Bentley.
Wes Bentley, that's who it is. Yeah, Wes Bentley. Yeah. He's got the Wes Bentley hair going in this movie.
Yeah.
So yeah, Final Four, Truman Show, Legally Blonde, Bewitched, Alice in Wonderland. Do we just skip the Grimaldis and just do Truman Show next week? Because I mean, that feels like the.
Well, first one, I probably, but why don't you guess where things are streaming? So where do you think Truman Show is streaming?
Truman Show's on Netflix.
Nope, Paramount Plus.
Paramount Plus. Okay, I can believe that.
Yep, Legally Blonde.
Legally Blonde, Netflix.
Max.
Max, nice. Bewitched is
rentable.
Yep. Alice in Wonderland is hopefully on Disney Plus.
Yeah, it's on Disney Plus. Yeah, I wonder if things have been like I would be curious what the warning is before Alice in Wonderland. You know, smoking.
don't take LSD.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Hey kids, don't do.
I know it's like Wizard of Oz and Dark Side of the Moon. Is there an Alice like listen to Alice in Wonderland and like there watch Alice in Wonderland and listen to like The Wall or something?
There probably is, but I'm not sure what it is. Or
No, I think I think Truman Show makes a lot of sense. Good pairing. Same year.
Yeah, same year. They're twin movies. For me, it's between Truman and Alice.
Yeah, I agree. I don't.
Yeah,
I think that's that makes the most sense. Truman Show came out in the summer of 1998, so Truman Show was before this movie. Do you remember seeing Truman Show in the theaters?
I do. Yeah, it was really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So we're doing the Dumb and Dumber connection between
Dumb and Dumber.
Yes, Jeff Daniels.
Dumb and Dumber could just be the title connection for next week.
Here we go. Although then people are going to think we're calling one of these movies.
Oh,
done.
Yeah. Good point. Yeah. Fair point. Yeah.
All right. Cool. Well,
how about when Carrie met Daniels?
There we go. Yeah.
When Carrie met Lloyd.
Yeah. Or when Sally met that. Harry met Sally.
Sure.
Yeah, it's when Harry met Sally, isn't it? That's the movie.
Yeah, but that doesn't have anything to do with the.
Well, when Harry met Lloyd is a play on when Harry met Sally.
That's very true. Yeah.
Yes.
Very true. Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. All right. Truman Show next week, everybody.
Breaking our own braids. Exciting. Yes. All right. Well, we're going to be watching more TV next week. We're watching Truman Show. Came out 2 years before Survivor. I'm assuming 2 years before Big Brother, although I don't know when the original Big Brother started in the UK.
Two years before Survivor. This is in the middle of the Real World era, though.
Oh, true. Yes, this says Big Brother was 2000, but that's not the UK version.
Right.
I don't know when the UK, but it is, I don't know. We'll figure that out for next week, maybe. So, all right.
Cool.
Well. Turn on the live feeds because we're watching Truman next week.
I'm very excited to watch Truman.
It is on Paramount Plus.
Great.
And we're circling back after a few weeks away. We're circling back to Jim Carrey from
That's right.
Eternal Sunshine.
Yep. There we go.
All right. Brennan, what are you looking forward to watching? Oh, anything on your honorable mentions you want to call out?
No, I didn't have anything else. I mean, the listeners exhausted my list this week. This was actually a really tough week for me to think of.
It actually was hard to find. For me, it was really hard to find movies that I thought were good connections. The only one that I didn't call that I think was like worth mentioning is the Brady Bunch movie.
Oh, yeah. Good point. Yeah.
Because that is like a parody of the Brady Bunch.
Yep. So.
Good point. Well, all right. What do you look forward to watching this week?
So there is a new Apple TV Plus 2-part documentary coming this weekend called Steve.
Oh,
that premiered at Southwest by Southwest. It's the Steve Martin documentary. Two parts. It's coming on Friday. I'm really, really excited to watch it. Can't wait. I've been a big Steve Martin fan for my entire life. We've covered him a couple times here on this podcast. Mm-hmm. I actually did look to see if there was any way we could connect Pleasantville to Steve, but there wasn't. Quite there. I couldn't quite make the leap of logic. So I wasn't going to make our listeners watch a 2-part documentary about Steve Martin just because I wanted them to, but you should if you want to.
Steve Martin in the Five Timers Club on this podcast.
Yeah, so that's what I'm watching this week. What about you?
Oh, I really need to get back to movie watching. I have not watched like I said, I have not watched a movie since Barbie last week, so sports March Madness taking up a lot of my time, so I'm going to try to watch some movies maybe tonight, but I don't know what. I am way behind on the weeks and weeks behind on the Criterion Challenge, so I really probably need to pick that up and watch either A Separation or Breaking the Waves. I don't know. So I don't know. We will find out. Weeks away from being caught up on that challenge. So nothing in particular that sticks out that I want to watch. I did really want to rewatch Saint Maud because just came out with the same filmmaker. So, but I think that's like a late night watch because it's a scary movie. So
I liked the movie a lot. That was a wild movie.
I liked it a lot when I saw it a couple years ago. It's just been a couple years. So I'm gonna get back on all of my challenges, including Ladder and Cricket.
Nice.
We're both going to be watching The Truman Show. Truman. He's going to find out what's outside of. Do you remember the town that he lives in Truman Show?
I don't remember. It's very similar to Pleasantville, though.
I was going to say, is it like Pleasant Falls or something like
that? Yeah, something like that, yeah. Last thing I would ever do to you is lie to you, Zach.
There. All right. Any good Letterboxd reviews? David Sim says absolutely in the bathtub masturbation hall of fame.
Boom, nailed it.
I would be curious. Let's see. This movie is genius beyond words. I wish more people cared about it. It's funny, and it also deals with important themes such as racism and the great social movement in the 1960s, but presented through the change television made during the time. The script is impeccable, and every scene builds off the last one. Ooh, all right, Richard, big fan of this. Let's see. I can't believe that Tobey Maguire single-handedly invented color TV, the history I've been missing out on. And then Adam James says WandaVision before WandaVision.
Yes, very true. There you go. All right.
Truman.